stand in me. And hello, and welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Networks, NCRA Radio Networks, and we're also on our flagship stations in Vancouver, Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM, and streaming online at cooperadio.org, and the full-hour show on CITR 101.9 FM, and streaming online at citr.ca. I'm, of course, Kelly. Michael will be here in just a few moments to talk about the special guest. For now, we're going to be talking about Disability Alliance of British Columbia for about 2 or 3 minutes. No, actually, maybe about 8 minutes. this one was from 5 months ago on tax aid on Disabled Alliance of British Columbia. This one, since July 2015, tax aid ABC advocates have helped British Columbians receiving provincial disability assistance to file their income taxes so they can take full advantage of all benefits and credits available to them. And I will play the thing right now. So,
I hadn't filed taxes since 2013 for the 2012 year. When you break your neck at the C2 point, you lose your automatic functioning, which is associated with your brain. So my brain didn't know how to function properly.
I think we had to go back 10 years. In the last 10 years, there was a few that had been done, but I just had to get all caught up with having everything done.
10 years ago, I filed my taxes. It's been a very long time. Fear of the unknown is huge, especially when it's dealing with your money. And if you're low income, then you don't have a lot of money to play with. And, you know, it's scary not knowing what's gonna happen with it.
I used to be able to carry the world on my shoulders since the broken neck and the brain injury. I need help now.
DABC is a program that helps people who are receiving provincial disability benefits to file their income taxes. So we needed to establish this program because each year there are about 20,000 British Columbians who receive provincial assistance who do not file their income taxes for various reasons.
We're actually being really proactive right now, trying to reach out to communities around BC. We have a number of workshops and tax filing clinics planned in communities including Kelowna, Penticton, Vernon, Kamloops, Terrace. While we're there, we're hoping to offer workshops about the benefits of income tax filing for people with disabilities, as well as to offer in-person tax filing assistance.
I found out about the tax aid program through the Hope and Area Transition Society. I have a worker there that informed me of it, and I thought it would be a great opportunity. It made it difficult for me to file my taxes because of the length of time, my depression, my anxiety, and the fear of not knowing how the government was going to react.
You ready to get started?
I am.
So
this tax aid program gave me the opportunity to do it in a way that wasn't so pressured. The experience was awesome. I felt really relaxed and at ease. It was simple, it was easy, and it was relieving to get it done. I got it all done in one day, in about an hour and a half, I think it was. Then there's the proper
the
way to
do it.
Yeah.
Hope's a great community, some unique socioeconomic challenges. We have a lot of people on PWD. We have high instances of mental health and addiction issues, and being able to bridge the gaps with services that come to us from Vancouver is just amazing.
How are you liking Hope?
I'm loving Hope. The sense of community here is just amazing.
Yeah.
Between the time that my taxes were filed and I started to see money was probably about 2 or 3 months. And it was a good chunk of money to begin with. I got all my GST back from the past years. I was able to free myself from a lot of debt as a result of filing my taxes. I was able to purchase my son's new work clothes for his job and put some money down on bills that are going to be due in the future.
Anywhere you like.
Okay, why don't we sit down here?
I learned about the program while I was at a GF Strong brain injury support group. At that point in time, I was floundering from not being able to do anything I once did. So the taxation was a huge problem for myself. You're not going down anymore, at least you're stable. Guiding my way through the taxation process prior to my injury was very easy because I could follow organizational structure. Since my injury, I'm not able to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 anymore and retain that. I go 1, 2, 5 if I'm lucky. I had a problem with structure. So the DABC took their knowledge and put it in front of me and explained it to me so it made sense to me. So that totally debilitated my anxiety and just took away the monetary monkey that was on my back, so to speak. This is where I come for a walk sometimes. And the monies that I'm getting back from it are helping me get the treatments that I need. I was able to get food that I was able to put on my table. I was able to leave my house because I had something in my pocket. You know, I was able to buy a coffee. I'm able to go for walks. I enjoy walking. Ooh, there's that breeze.
I know, it's nice.
It's just funding. You know, when you have no money, and a lot of love for life goes away. Especially when you had so much of life with so much money prior. It's just frustrating. So they helped me, the DABC settled that for me. And now I'm able to move forward.
How do you not want to go to work when it looks like that?
We've had excellent results with the program. So in the first year, we have assisted over 300 clients to file their income taxes, which means that they have been able to access $545,000 worth of tax credits and benefits. And we have filed, in doing that, 809 years worth of taxes for people.
We assist people to recover hundreds or, in many cases, even thousands of dollars back on their income tax return, which for the clients we help, in some cases, can be life-changing.
Hi, Selena. Yes.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Because of all my health problems, I got really behind in doing my taxes quite a few years, and it was daunting. I have metastatic stage 4 cancer. And so it's a great service for people that are on disability because our income is low.
So, Dor, just before we prepare your tax return.
All right, so we're going to have to leave it there. But you can check out Tax Aid DABC. All in the information on Facebook, not Facebook, YouTube. You can go to their Vancouver Foundation for Making This Important Work Possible. Go to the website www.taxaidaidabc.org. That's all in one word. So you are tuned into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly, along with Michael Rubin. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing okay. A little rushed, but hey.
Hey, I had a little rush too, so that makes two of us.
Yeah.
So you have a special guest on.
Yes, I do. Her name is Emily Gillespie, and she wrote the book Dancing with Ghosts. Now, no, this isn't a horror book. This is there's some horrific things to it, but it isn't a horror book. It is a book about the main character Patricia trying to guide her way through the healthcare system. So this is how the book does relate to disabilities in the fact of, hey, healthcare system, and someone trying to find their way through it, foreign or not, right? Okay. So Emily.
Hi.
You there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Loud and clear. So, you're joining us from Toronto today, right?
Yeah, Toronto.
Okay. So let's get into this. So a little bit about yourself and maybe a bit why you wrote the book.
Okay, so I always knew I wanted to write. That was definitely my first career goal. Made up my mind about that in elementary school. And I never had the opportunity. I was so busy with school and with post-secondary education. Mm-hmm. So I did a degree in English and gender equality and social justice. And then after that, I did a master's in critical disability studies. And then I finally had time to follow my passion and start writing fiction as I was hunting for work. So I had a bit of free time. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in my studies and in my activism. I was interested in the mental health system and how fragmented it is. So what I mean by that is, like, I live in Toronto, the biggest city in Canada, developed country, and I'm educated, and I know a lot of really educated, really involved people, and yet trying to navigate the mental health system, trying to access resources, is like a huge research project. It's very fragmented, and even people who should know where you can go to access things don't know, because there are some limited resources, mm-hmm. but it's not at all holistic. So, like, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the nature of really short-term services for people struggling with mental health. And I had these ideas in mind when I was doing schooling, when I was doing my master's degree. And then I was thinking about it, and I realized that fiction made sense to kind of explore and critique the shortcomings of this.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a...
Emily, I'm going to cut you off for a second here.
Sure.
Can you kind of hold your phone a little steadier to your mouth? Because it seems like the levels are going up and down.
Okay, sorry about that.
It's okay. So go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry, what would you like me to answer?
Oh, okay. So how did Dancing with Ghosts come up?
So I wanted to write about the mental health care system, mm-hmm. and I was also thinking about the theme of domestic violence, and I was thinking about different books and other things in popular culture, like songs that kind of glorify domestic violence or show abusive relationships mm-hmm. and normalize them, like frame it as not problematic. Or show a character who's a victim just stand up for themselves and kind of portrays this victim narrative. So I wanted to create a fictional text that's really accessible that people can read and start to have these conversations about. I find a lot of conversations around domestic violence or around mental health mm-hmm. happen in isolation. So what I mean by that is they might happen in a really academic space in a classroom that isn't really accessible to the general public. So I'm really interested in how do these conversations make their way into popular culture, into a book that might be sitting on someone's coffee table and might start a discussion.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, because most times these kind of topics are something that's like, oh, wait a second, you better say that behind closed doors, or we better sweep this under the rug. We don't want the whole world to know that we have something like this in our family, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge problem with access is the policing of what can be said. And that kind of plays into an interesting concept of what I would call respectability politics around what's proper to say, what gets framed as normal, and what kind of conversations people can have at dinner tables and with coworkers and in public spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do have this curious question. Why the title, Dancing with Ghosts? There's a meaning there. So what's the meaning?
Okay, so Dancing with Ghosts, the main character is Patricia. Mm-hmm. She comes to Toronto from a smaller town, and this book is narrated by Patricia. She comes from a smaller town to Toronto to she's really excited to start her freshman year of university and make new friends and kind of succeed in this space. She proactively reaches out and tries to get mental health resources, and she's kind of shut down there. And during this process, she starts a romantic relationship with somebody named Derek. And that starts out as a bit of a love story for her and then becomes really toxic. So that's a bit about what the book's around. So okay. Dancing with Ghosts is referring to a traditional ghost, and not literal ghost, but these past figures in her life, like Derek. When she's writing it, Derek's book, Derek is no longer in her life, still kind of shaping or has shaped her past. And there's another character. So if you read the book, she's writing to somebody by the name of Alice, who becomes a really close person in her life. And Alice also, in the same sense, becomes one of her ghosts. During this book, Patricia is always compared by Derek to a former lover that she doesn't know much about his ex, except that she's not good enough in comparison to this person. So there's also a lot of interesting kind of references to competing with people's ghosts. And I think a lot of people have been there, have been in a relationship, and they hear reference to past partners that maybe they can't compare to, or it's kind of an invisible person in a space.
Yeah, I think we've all been where the one person puts the ex up on a pedestal where they can't be touched.
Or not so much that, but you're not even sure what you're navigating on. She's just kind of doesn't know much about Derek. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece that just thinking about how her life was shaped by these different people who've come to know of it.
Right. So I want to get into a bit about the inspiration behind the book. Is there something, an event or something that's personal to you that inspired the book?
Well, I always knew I was going to write a book, and this just felt like the book that naturally made sense for me to write.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work of fiction. Yeah, some of it was inspired by my real-world frustrations. In school, I really wanted to examine the short-term mental health services that are offered. So I've experienced this. I've experienced trying to get mental health support and learning that you need to prove that you have a problem, and then maybe if you're lucky, you can get 5 appointments or something. So that was in part inspired by my experiences, my frustration, and kind of my peers as well. Like, I have a lot of peers who are mental health advocates, so it's kind of like collective frustration with the mental health system. And so there's that piece. It was also really inspired by my frustration of the glorification of race culture that you see in media, be it books or movies, this kind of this normalization of abusive relationships, that you want a partner who treats you in a really negative way, or that this is just kind of normalized, not critiqued. So there's that piece. And I'm also really personally frustrated with narratives that suggest there are lots of mental health resources.
Right.
And it's just up to the individual who might be struggling to find them. So by that I mean, like, say something like the Bell Left campaign.
Yeah.
It's a big national campaign, and you don't know about Let's Talk, this is a national campaign and fundraiser trying to kind of destigmatize mental health. And by destigmatize mental health, they really mean
okay. White, Kelly's giving me a signal. We got to go to a break. go ahead, Kelly.
All right, yes, thank you, Michael. We'll put you on hold and for just a moment, so while we do our ads and stuff, all right?
Great.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. You're tuned in to the Community Living Show. Your guest is Emily Gillespie, who's the author of Dancing with Ghosts. Not yes. Wolves.
I keep wanting to do that too. Sorry, sorry, yeah. Emily.
Dancing with Ghosts.
No problem.
Yeah, so we'll be right back in a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more. All right, you're tuning into the Community Living Show on the NCRE Radio Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly, and along with Michael. Excuse me.
Geez, you had to choke my name out. Is that it?
Sorry, it's just something's in my throat. It's really scratching. It's starting to irritate.
It's the air. It's always dry in here.
Most likely, yeah.
So, yeah. So, we're speaking with Emily Gillespie, and she wrote the book Dancing with Ghosts, and I'm going to stress this part. The title actually has a question mark on it, so it's Dancing with Ghosts question mark, I believe, right?
Question.
Is that right, Emily? Emily?
Did we lose her?
Did we lose you?
Oh, hang on. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Sorry. I forgot to put it on the air.
He forgot to push a button.
Go on, Emily.
Okay. So it's just Dancing with Ghosts. No question.
There is no question mark. Okay. I'm looking at something here at my notes, and I wonder why I put a question mark there. So what makes especially mental health so important to our society?
Okay, so if you don't mind, I'm really quickly going to go back. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to say before was, like, there might be national campaigns or at a smaller level, like, say, posters across the university saying, you know, if you're struggling, reach out, get help, let's talk, let's end the stigma. Mm-hmm. So it really suggests that there's resources on one hand, yet if someone actually goes out and goes to, say, their family doctor, and tells them that they want more support, there actually really is a huge lack of support. So that was just a little contradiction I was trying to point out. So things onto individuals. So nationally, so I think mental health and this discussion kind of takes place at two levels. At the individual level, you know, good mental health is about quality of life for people. And mental health supports look different for everybody. There isn't a one-size-fits-all support system, and there shouldn't be. I really think people should have the space to make decisions about what's going to work for them, mm-hmm. but there still needs to be resources in the first place in order to access. So good mental health is about quality of life at the individual level, and then at the larger level, we need to think about, you know, how do we move beyond stigma? How do you rearrange structures for accessing mental health services that are actually accessible to the people who need them? And whenever we think about mental health, I think thinking about diversity is a huge piece. Like, someone who's white and middle class trying to access mental health services in an urban center is going to have a really different experience than someone who's more marginalized trying to access services. But we really need holistic mental health care that isn't short-term, that's easy for people to navigate in Canada at large.
So you're bringing me to something else that with mental health. Mental health is more than just, you think you're depressed, so here's a pill to go away. It's more than that, right? Mm-hmm. It's got to be a whole system of helping a person understand what's going on with themselves, right?
Yeah.
So,
So there's all different types of support. So people with different mental health histories might desire different things. For some people, someone might want medication, and that's fine if that's what they want. People might want a proper diagnosis, which is very, very hard to get. There's a big advocacy piece that unfortunately surrounds diagnosis. People might need emergency services. Like, some people might be in crisis and they need accessible emergency departments that treat them with dignity and respect and understand what the person's going through and don't treat them like second-class citizens. Like, that's a huge piece. We need more funded therapists. We need more funded social workers and also creative programs. Like, this is about quality of life. This isn't just about medical care. So maybe we need more funded peer support programs, more accessible and funded art therapy programs. Like, this is really pulling back and looking at what the community needs and what the community has told people we need. But we're really, as a country, not there yet. Like, we're still so backwards. We're at the point when people are going to doctors asking them where resources are.
Right. So, I agree that resources are actually hard to find, and you brought up emergency care, and I was reminded of a Facebook post that I saw of a friend of mine. she has PTSD.
Okay.
Because she went through a really rough patch in her life where her house burnt down. She got a illness that passed the blood-brain barrier, all sorts of things, just, like one trauma right after another within a few months, right? So she's gotten past that and with her PTSD, and she's living basically without medications, things like that. But she has this really extreme trigger that if she hears a fire truck in a certain setting, that it gives her a atypical heart arrhythmia, and she actually has to go to emergency and get jolted to, you know, the whole paddle thing to restart her heart.
Wow.
And it's like, so how do you, it's like, that's kind of off the wall and odd in comparison, but it's actually a mental health thing, right?
Mm-hmm. And so many things too, like health, when we're thinking about disability, people often don't experience disability in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I identify personally as having multiple types of disability. Often folks don't, you know, someone might not just identify as having mental health, they might identify with other disabilities and other identities, which shapes what kind of care you're going to get. So, like, what class you are, what age you are,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you're straight, where in Canada you're located. And that really affects, too, how you're treated when you walk into emergency department. If English is your first language, that's going to shape how you're treated. There's
right.
So many different factors that go into this. And that shouldn't be the way. Like, how you're viewed in society should shape what kind of health care you get. I think that's one of the main points as well that comes out of this.
Right.
A, our system's really fragmented. B, your social location should not shape what kind of health care you get, but it totally does. So many mental health care resources are about what you can pay for out of your pocket. Great, you want to speak to a counselor, because that might make the difference between your life and death. Well, can you afford it? Yeah, so your class really, really affects your health in all aspects of health, but especially with mental health.
Right. That's in, it's especially the way healthcare is set here in Canada, that you shouldn't have to worry about getting good quality care for any aspect of your health because of your ability to pay or not to pay.
Yes.
That's one of the premises of the healthcare system here in Canada, right?
In theory, that's how it's supposed to operate. But what does it mean if someone's struggling to afford the medication that might actually help them. And even though there are very limited provincially funded supports in order to get coverage, drug companies still at the end of the day get to decide what medications to cover, for instance, or to focus. So I don't mind disclosing this. I currently have the Trillium Ontario health benefits. So that means, because I have a low income, because I've been underemployed for a few years, that I have some economic support just for medications. So sometimes I might get a prescription for something, like a migraine medication, and I go to the pharmacy and they tell me if it's covered or not. So that, like, what does that mean? When insurance companies are the ones that get to decide what medications you get, not doctors. So that's one piece of that.
Yeah.
And why? And it doesn't cover anything else. So this is just drug coverage. This isn't, you know, coverage for physiotherapy, which I need, or coverage for other mental health support. So it's interesting to focus on, like, drugs are the things we're going to support over other things. And I'm not at all anti-drugs. I just think that we need holistic care and access to the resources we want, whatever they might be.
Well, balanced care is the key, right? It can't just be, it's got to be a whole program. It can't be just, oh, well, here, take a pill, or here, sit in his room and talk to this person. And it's got to be a little bit of both until the person is actually starting to heal, right?
I think both balanced care and people having options. So I think it's absolutely atrocious if, because of a person's funding, they know what holistic support might benefit them, but they don't have access, be it because they live in a rural area and that program isn't offered in their city, or be it they only have funding for medications but not other support.
Right.
So, like, there's a huge division between what's recommended, what probably academic best practices are in the areas of mental health, and what that actually looks like on the ground. And I find this so, in part, so upsetting because, you know, Canada, as a quote, first world country, and I understand, you know, that's very, everyone in Canada isn't treated as first world citizens. But Canada, as this developed country, if we're supposed to be one of the leaders in our healthcare system, is so fragmented, then what does this mean? And I really think we need, yes, we do have some resources, but I'm tired of kind of patting ourselves on the back type narratives of, look how far we've come with mental health care, because we still have so far to go. Like, standards in somewhere like Toronto and in the other two Ontario communities I've lived in are awful. And anywhere I've gotten is because I'm educated, I'm white, and I won't be quiet until you give me the resources I need. And that's the only reason I've ever gotten anywhere in that system. And that's a huge position of privilege, to be able to present myself in a way to healthcare professionals that I'm listened to and respected. And everybody doesn't have that that social privilege.
Right. Well, You bring up a good point, because our society still judges the book by the cover. Let's go that way.
My cover is nice.
What's that?
I said the cover of my book is very nice.
Yes, the cover of your book is very nice. It's very well done. So you should congratulate your artist on that, your graphic artist for that one.
Yeah, I'm very happy.
So you're extremely passionate about mental health, healthcare, and and our society. I can tell that from everything that you said. How did that affect the writing process for the book? Because it is a fictional work.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think, there's this wall quote, motivational posters that kind of, like, express the sentiment of, like, you can kind of tell more truth in fiction. And I've used different mediums to kind of have these conversations around healthcare. Like I briefly mentioned before, I spent in school. I have both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in related fields. Mm-hmm. So I've lived experience with these topics. I've volunteered and worked in related sectors, and also like a lot of my peer group kind of relates to some of these frustrations. So this wasn't at all an academic research project, but my book was informed by these frustrations and by these observations that shaped this work. And right. I think my future, like this is not my last book, and I think my future works will also kind of continue to explore these themes.
Well, I just for the fact that you're so passionate about the topic, I could actually see another academic kind of book coming out of this, because of how passionate you are about. But do you plan on writing more fiction?
Like fiction is my passion. Fiction has mm-hmm. always been that. Unfortunately, everything is about access issues. I had the lovely opportunity to write this book mm-hmm. when after I finished my master's degree when I was looking for employment. So I would love to write, and I do plan to write. I'm hoping someday to be able to have part-time employment that I can support myself with and to write part-time and to actually set aside that time. I don't want to be a writer that only gets to write Saturday afternoons after a busy work week. I'm really hoping to someday be in the position where I can have a few days a week that I have dedicated to writing. I absolutely love creativity, and I think that fiction, I think that art is a place to have these really important social justice conversations. So this is part of my activism.
Cool. I like, let's get back to your activism. Remind me, I said activism when we come back, because Kelly, we need to go to a break. Is that right?
Yeah. So, okay. And of course, this is all going to be edited for tomorrow's edition of the Community Living Show on Co-op Radio. So, so you'll hear parts of the questions and stuff like that. So, so you are tuned in to the Community Living Show. I'm Kelly. This is Michael. And we're talking to Emily Gillespie, who is the author of Dancing with Ghosts. So we're going to put you on hold there, Emily.
Okay.
We'll be right back in a moment.
No problem.
The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
And you just say activism.
Yes, that's right.
Hi there. So this is the Community Living Show. I'm, of course, Kelly, and this is Michael, and we're talking to Emily Gillespie, who is, maybe get the full detail.
Emily, she's calling us from Toronto, and she wrote the book Dancing with Ghosts, and it is a fictional book with the topic matter of mental health and mental health care. So, yes, you're reminding me to say activism because you were making a point about your activism with mental health and healthcare, right?
Yes.
So I didn't want to interrupt your point.
No problem. So I was just thinking about works of fiction and artists being larger forms of activism. Mm-hmm. So mental health is one of my passions. I'm also really interested in, especially now in 2017, the last few years, particularly in Toronto, we've had a lot of instances of headline sexual assault cases that were really premised in this kind of normalization of sexual assault. So, part of my activism, say this past summer, I attended things like Spot Walk in Toronto, which is kind of problematizing rape culture. I've done all sorts of kind of on-the-street activism in relation to both rape culture and mental health. So I just think that art is another form of activism. Some of the texts that have spoken to me over the years have had really clear descriptions of mental health struggles in them. Mm-hmm. So I remember, say, reading a book that has a really vivid description of depression and reading and rereading a few pages in that book. And those pages really spoke to me more so than my peers, more so than maybe doctors. And I was really hoping to do that to somebody else, for someone else. I was really hoping for people to be able to read a text and just feel a little less alone, or be able to feel that perhaps I said something, you know, maybe it's only one sentence that someone feels speaks for them in a way that maybe I captured a feeling. So that's also what I kind of mean by that.
Yeah.
Activism piece.
You know, art is activism. I totally agree with, mm-hmm. with that. And a lot of times, okay, because I'm a photographer and I shoot documentaries and things like that, so people really see me as an artist slash activist. But novel writers are the same. They, you know, when you actually start getting into topic matter, you start bringing in facts and stuff like that.
You're probably more than that. Just a photographer. You're an inspirational person. So,
yeah. Well, that's what I'm getting at with Emily being a novelist. That you could totally be all those things, and people shouldn't think that it's just a work of fiction. That you actually have to write a really good fiction, you have to actually go out and experience what's going on around you, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think we do need more books written by people with firsthand experience. So I have firsthand experience with mental health and with navigating these systems. And it's really strong to have people, you know, even in works of fiction, writing about things that they've experienced. So this isn't someone else writing about folks with mental health. This is somebody with lived experience writing these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Just to draw from that briefly, one of the most exciting, so the book came out last month, mm-hmm. and one of the most exciting things so far has been hearing feedback from people I don't know at all across the world, actually, going as far as Germany, saying they read my book and it spoke to them. That they could relate to the struggles of Patricia, who is the main character.
Right.
You know, some people said they laughed, they cried, that this book spoke to them, the mental health struggles, the frustrations in accessing the system. People are commenting about how frustrated they also are with the healthcare system. So I feel like that's really exciting to create something that people are reaching out to me to respond to and saying that, they're really happy this exists, that they resonated with this a bit.
Yeah. So, I know that this is a mixed bag of feelings because they're responding to you because it's a great book, mm-hmm. and it's well written and all that sort of stuff. But, so that's got to feel good. But what about people coming back and say they totally relate to it? And how does that make you feel on the activist side? Not just the writer side, people are really enjoying my book, but on the activist side, where you look at how much work you have to do as an activist.
Yeah, so thank you very much for that question. As a writer, it's definitely exciting, but as an activist, it's also, you know, in a way really depressing that, like this book, the tagline for it is, this isn't a love story. And, like, it's a story of struggle and it's a story of abuse. So it is in a way really sad and frustrating when so many people are saying that they relate to parts of this and they are kind of experiencing it with Trisha. So there's that piece as well. Mm-hmm. But I do hope it feels like books, for a lot of people, make them feel a little less alone that, you know, here's these works of fiction. I hope that, and I think that media is a place where people organize. But, you know, I've added a little tiny bit to this Canadian conversation around mental health and related activism, and I'm gonna keep going with that.
So, let's get into what advice you might have for up and coming writers.
So, I mentioned that I wrote this book when I was looking for work, mm-hmm. and I always knew I was going to write, but I actually I did it in my spare time. But I actually only told a few people. Only about 3 of my friends knew I was writing a book until I turned around and told everybody I was getting published, and no one knew I wrote a book. And I did that in part because I wasn't waiting for anyone's approval to tell me that I was a writer or that it was valid to spend my time on my art. So I would just tell people that if you think you're a writer, if you think of yourself as a writer or any other type of artist, that you are. You don't need to wait to get published or wait for approval of others to kind of define yourself as an artist. And I would just say, keep going. Whatever work you're creating, it's going to speak to some people. Some people are going to like it and appreciate it, and other people aren't going to care. But keep going, keep putting yourself out there, and eventually your work, your ideas, your art will get into the right hands.
Yeah, look, that is actually great advice. If you are an emerging artist of any type, listen to what mm-hmm. she just said. Listen to those words. Just keep going with it. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to find it. Somebody's going to enjoy it because that's art. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best advice for writers or any type of artists. Wow.
And also, social media is on your side in this mm-hmm. generation. Figure out how to connect to your audience. Figure out where your peers are online and go network with them.
Well, did that help you out a lot?
I would say yes, and that's really exciting. I'm really excited for my friends and people I personally know in Toronto to read my book, mm-hmm. but I'm almost more so excited when people I don't know at all and have no common friends with reach out to me saying that I moved them. I had someone tweeting at me from California saying how much my book spoke to her and how she was reading it and crying, and that really moved me. This is someone who has no personal investment in me and appreciated me as an artist.
Right.
So, yes, social media made all those connections possible. Mm-hmm. And in a way made it a bit, like, it's very hard to get into writing and publishing and marketing, yet in a way it made it a bit more equal. Years ago, I wouldn't have had access to this grand network where I could go connect with people around the world and show them my art. So that's right. Actually really exciting.
Yeah. So since you brought up social media and on that point, let's go through all of your social media, because honestly, we wouldn't be interviewing Emily right now on the radio if it hadn't been for Twitter.
Yeah,
it was. We liked the same tweet, and I think we both clicked through on each other. I think is what might have happened, and because it's something you said yesterday about. Something about the shoes or something like that. So it meant did we check each other out? But it was a tweet that we both liked, and we both went and looked at each other's profile, and so we wouldn't have Emily today on the show if it hadn't been for Twitter. So let's go through your social media. Why don't we start with Twitter? How people can find you.
Okay, sorry, 1 second. Computer just froze. Perfect time. Okay.
Yes, so there's always a perfect Twitter, time for everything.
Yeah.
My Twitter handle is @Emily, EMILY, My last name is Gillespie, G-I-L-L-E-S-P-I-E-M. So Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, Gillespie, G-I-L-L-E-S-P-I-E-M. And that's my Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Facebook. I have an author's page, and that's just my first and last name. So again, the same spelling, Emily Gillespie. You can also find me on Instagram. Sorry, one second. So my Instagram name is Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, dot M, M as in Matthew, dot Gillespie, same spelling. So that's Instagram. So you can see my inspirational writing pictures. And I also have a WordPress blog now. And that has all of my links on it. And my WordPress blog title is Emily Gillespie. If you are interested in learning more about the book, I have a Goodreads account. And that's the same first and last name, Emily Gillespie. So if you just put into Google Emily Gillespie Dancing with Ghosts, you will see my Goodreads account. And that has links to where you can buy the book. The book is for sale on Amazon.com. and Amazon.ca. So that's for print copies. And it's also available on Kobo. So it's Kobo.com.
Okay. So. Okay. Talk about social media.
I'm
quickly trying to add you into our program Facebook group.
Yeah,
and
I think I joined it.
Oh, did you? Okay,
potentially.
Well, that's good.
Maybe that's why it's giving me an error message.
Uh-oh.
I'm like, why is it giving me an error message? That's not good.
Mm.
So, Emily, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have any other contact information besides Twitter?
So I have Twitter. That's my my name with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Instagram as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Instagram is Emily.m as in Michael. And then my last name is G-L-S-C-I-E. So that's my Instagram, my Twitter. I have an author's Facebook page, which is my first name, Emily, and my last name, Gillespie, and that's under Pages. Mm-hmm. You can follow along there. And then I have a WordPress website, and you can find that by putting in my first and last name and WordPress into Google. Yeah. So feel free to follow me. Feel free to send me messages there. I check them daily.
Yep.
The one other site is Goodreads. So Goodreads is a novel site where people kind of keep track of what books they've read.
Mm-hmm.
So there's links to my book on Goodreads. And if you just put in my name, Emily Gillespie, and Dancing with Ghosts, mm-hmm. which is the book title, you'll see my book there.
All right.
On Amazon and Kobo.
All right. That sounds good. Listen, we really appreciate you coming to us on the Community Living Show.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll look forward to hearing you again.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for following us, too, on social media. So,
I look forward to seeing your future content.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of which, next week we have Madeline
Lalonde, who is the NDP candidate for Vancouver Colchina. So she'll be on talking about, you know, provincial stuff. And I'm hoping to get Paul on as well, our disability advocates.
That'd be good.
On the show.
Yeah, thank we you. Have an election coming up here in British Columbia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that on your Facebook, I think. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Emily.
Yeah,
we got to get
you.
Going. Take care now.
Okay, I'm gonna sign off now. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, and again, you can always check us out on, and of course, if you want to write us, please email us, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook. We're also on Twitter, @CLivingRadio. Facebook, Twitter. So we got them all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's next week. Stay tuned for upcoming shows that are on the NCRA radio networks. We will be back again next week, same time, same station, on the Community Living Show.
All right.
I'm Kelly. This is Michael. Thank you very much for listening.
See you guys next time.
See you all next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.